It's a Monday edition of Locked On Heat. On today's show, the Heat return to Miami tied 1-1 with the Sixers, and they leave Miami down 3-1. We talk about what went wrong for the Heat in Game 4.
Then we'll open up the mailbag to talk about Justice Winslow's strong series and the mysterious disappearance of Kelly Olynyk. Thank you for listening, for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back, and I write for the Miami Heat's Tip-Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Romello, credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and allyoucanheat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided, and you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRomel13.
Sixers coach Brett Brown said after Game 4 that they didn't deserve to win. The 76ers turned the ball over 26 times, made just 7 of their 31 three-point attempts. Joel Embiid was held in check through three quarters, and the Heat had a 10-point lead with 79 seconds left in the third quarter. But somehow the Heat lost that game. Just like in Game 3, I thought that the Heat played as well as they could have for a majority of the first three quarters. But the Sixers pulled away in the fourth quarter of both games. But in that Game 4, David, was that more of a lack of execution on Miami's part, or was that just the talent gap?
I think it's both, to be honest with you. And I know that sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but the reality is that this team needs to execute at such a high level in order to pull away victories because of their lack of talent. And so when you get what happened at the end of the third quarter and at the start of the fourth, when they stopped executing as well as they had for the first three quarters, for most of the first three quarters, they start turning the ball over just enough, and they're not able to capitalize on any opportunities because they lack such talent. Then they start to give up their lead. They allow Philadelphia to creep back into it and allow them to build up a lead of their own. And unfortunately, from that point, there's only so much they could do to overcompensate with grit and grind and effort. And that's what really happened in the fourth quarter. If not for 36-year-old Dwayne Wade, this game potentially becomes a blowout. But he does just enough in the fourth, hits his free throws unlike most of the rest of the Heat roster, and was able to keep things pretty tight there. But it was, I think, the lack of execution that lets Philadelphia get back into it, and then the lack of talent that doesn't allow Miami to just continue to build on the lead. Like, they had as good a game as they can possibly play for, 35 minutes. And then, unfortunately, things start to fall apart there. And that's just the way this team is constructed. They're not going to be as powerful or as driven as most other groups, especially in the playoffs. And you start to notice that a lot more. And then, unfortunately, if you have any errors in execution, that gives a team as talented as Philadelphia just enough of a crack for them to break through and split the game wide open.
I thought Ben Simmons in particular really started to dominate in that fourth quarter. He put his imprint on that game. I mean, the guy is so physical, and he can affect the game in so many ways, whether it's passing the ball or playing good defense or just getting to the basket and scoring. I thought that really hurt. And I just, he's got the cockiness and the swagger of a guy who's been here before. And I've been really, really impressed with Ben Simmons. And, I think that his attitude is starting to rub Heat fans the wrong way, much the way that I feel like Heat fans in the first round just immediately begin to hate whoever the opponent is. Like, how many Heat fans hated Jeremy Lin 2 years ago? You know what I mean? We both were. Simmons and Embiid have just absolutely dominated the series when they've been on the floor. I mean, the defensive statistics when Embiid is on the floor are just insane. I mean, the Heat, Barry Jackson had a piece today, the Heat are shooting like 26 or 27% when guarded by Embiid. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, it was his clip was 40% during the regular season. Basically, Embiid is shutting everything down just because of his sheer size. And then that puts a clamp on what Miami is able to do offensively otherwise. And they then have those cold streaks. And I thought that the game swung in that final minute and a half of the third quarter when Miami's 10-point lead got dwindled down to about a 4-point lead or something going into that fourth quarter. Irsan Ilyasova hit back-to-back baskets. And ever since then, after that, it was just, I don't know, Miami just seemed shook. Like, they really did.
And I think
at that point, I was just like, look, the 76ers look like they're the more experienced team right now. Miami looks shook. I mean, they were they that got them out of their zone, out of their game, and they were in such a good rhythm for that entire third, for like 10 and a half minutes of that third quarter.
There was a higher energy level to them throughout most of the game. Again, in that first, you know, let's say 34 minutes of play or so. And then once they took that punch from Philadelphia, it just, they didn't seem like they had any kind of logistical response for it. They didn't know how to handle it. The crowd got taken out a little bit. And then, you know, again, to Miami's credit, they were able to build their way back. But I think they were down by as much as, I want to say, 6 going into those waning moments of the fourth quarter. And then again, if not for Dwayne Wade hitting a turnaround jumper, hitting his free throws at just the right moment, giving them a chance at closing that gap and maybe pulling out a victory, this could have been pretty ugly in the fourth quarter, as we saw in Game 3 when Miami felt like they were as close as they could possibly be, and then all of a sudden that fourth quarter just start to fall apart. I think that's the talent gap. That's the disparity in the talent level, is that Miami plays as well as they can for as long as they can, and then all of a sudden Philadelphia just says, okay, we can still score whenever the hell we want to, because we've got – if Dario Saric, who seems like he doesn't miss and had his worst game in Game 4, is like he might be, what, your fourth, fifth best player at this point? J.J. Redick's having a huge game. Marco Bellinelli off the bench is having another big game. I mean, you get all these different players to come in and contribute. Look, one of our X factors at the start when we were previewing the series was Robert Covington, a guy that I know you've written and talked to. And you know, he's a really great player, defender, et cetera. He's been a non-factor, and it hasn't mattered. They're still 1-3 out of 4 games.
Going back to Brett Brown's comment after the game, the fact that he was shocked that the 76ers won this game, doesn't that comment, that way that they just sort of pulled that game out of their ass, just feel like, doesn't that have a big three era Miami Heat feel to it? And I'm not comparing those Sixers to the big three Heat. They're obviously not that good, but that's going back to that talent gap. I mean, Miami used to just, how many games did the Heat win that they had no business winning? I mean, most of them probably, like during the regular season.
There was always a chance with that Miami Heat group. Again, you're absolutely right. Not as talented as that big three group, but there was always a chance. Like even midway through the fourth quarter, if Miami was down 12 or so, you never really despaired because they could turn it on instantly and close that gap within mere seconds, it felt like. They could tighten the screws defensively. Yeah. They could get big shots from a number of different players. And that's what it means to have that kind of talent. Like, this is the knock on this Miami team, if there is one. As hard as they play, as intense as they normally are, you need everybody to step up. Go ahead.
No, I'm glad you brought that up, because we need to respond to the hashtag FireSpo people right now.
I didn't realize that was still out there.
A majority or minority. It is ridiculous. People are saying that Spo is blowing this series for the Heat and everything. Look, do the Heat have a top 40 player on that roster right now?
No,
I would say not even close. I think
Goran's as close as it is. Yeah, maybe Josh
is as close as it gets. And I think Dragic is somewhere between 45 and 50 in the NBA rankings. Whiteside, I think going into the season, you could have put him in there. He has completely dropped out of that. Josh Richardson might be the second best. Second closest to being considered top 50. He's probably somewhere in the 60s or 70s.
Go ahead, because I think you're going around the same level I am here.
The fact that Spoelstra has this team where they are at, I am sick and tired of hearing people say that Spoelstra, look, Brett Brown has done an awesome job, but I don't think he has out-coached Spo in this series. I think, if anything, and I tweeted this and I put a lot of thought into this, they have coached to a draw, which completely eliminates Miami's typical advantage, which is coaching. Like, just Brett Brown coaching Spo to a draw is enough for the 76ers to eliminate that advantage, and that's why they are up 3-1, in addition to all the talent that they have. But I think that Spo has done an awesome job coaching this series. He has done as much as he can. Do I disagree with some of the substitutions he's had?
Yes.
Yeah, I disagree with some of the guys he's played. But look, he doesn't have the talent, and we'll get to that in a mailbag question a little bit later on.
Okay, how about this?
The only reason they are even in this series is because Eric Spoelstra is getting the most out of this group.
That's fair.
The absolute most.
You can absolutely make that point, and I agree with that. But I can't point to something that Brett Brown, and maybe I haven't thought about it for more than just the past few seconds, but I can't think of anything off the top of my head where I saw Brett Brown make a mistake as far as his coaching and rotations have gone. I could say that Spoelstra made a mistake by leaving Whiteside too long, by leaving Tyler Johnson too long, by not putting Goron in enough in game three. I can't say the same thing about Brett Brown. And that could be why you might think, as some people have said, that Brown has outcoached Spoelstra, is that he hasn't made as many mistakes.
People look too much at just the substitutions as far as coaching is concerned. But the things that Spoelstra has done to counter Simmons and to counter Embiid and to dial up the aggression on defense in a way that we haven't seen in the entire regular season.
Yeah.
And to do that in the first round of a series and just the minor adjustments that he's making, that you count all of that together and I think it's a draw. I don't think that you can give Brett Brown the considerable edge in this series just yet. I think that they have both coached really well in their own ways.
I don't know. Fire Spoelstra seems so ridiculous. Like with the number of coaching candidates that there are now and the number of positions that are going to be open of whoever is available as a potential coach, who would be a better, significantly better replacement than Eric Spoelstra? I can't.
Nobody. And if any Heat fan comes out with an idea, if any Heat fan comes out and says that they should hire like Mark Jackson or something,
or
they don't get to
listen
to the show anymore. They're done. All right. Let's move on to our mailbag questions here. Got a bunch of them, and we will do that after this quick break. The playoffs are here, and just like the Miami Heat, it's time to step up your game. If you run a company and you're unhappy with the results from traditional advertising online or in print, make a big-time adjustment by advertising with us here on Locked On Heat. We've already got national brands advertising on the show, but it's also a great opportunity for South Florida businesses to connect with local Heat fans. You've heard about the studies already, how podcast listeners are 65% more likely to engage with advertisers, and how the number of people listening to podcasts continue to grow every year, heck, every month. Be ahead of the curve and start advertising on a podcast with us here at Locked On Heat. You have nothing to lose by reaching out, and our rates are reasonable, and they're based on the number of listens, so it's an efficient use of your time and your money. For more information on next steps, email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com, and we could be talking about your company right here on the show. All right, let's go to the mailbag here. Our first question. Why aren't we starting Justice Winslow at the 3 and Josh Richardson at the 2? The defense would be great, and it would allow for TJ to come off the bench and help score there. He hasn't played well in the starting lineup. Josh asked that question. Thank you, Josh, on Twitter.
Yes.
I mean, if Tyler is not – Tyler's minutes have been waning
dwindling,
this entire series,
yes.
Right? Dwindling, yeah. Waning this entire series. And – look, the Heat are on the ropes right now. One game from elimination. If they're going to make a radical change, and I think changing up the starting lineup at this point would be considered a radical change, this would be it. I think this would be one of the changes that they could make.
Mm-hmm.
Is again sliding Josh Richardson into the 2, starting Winslow at the 3. I just don't know that necessarily solves Miami's problems. Winslow has shot better than Tyler Johnson in this
yes.
series, so maybe that helps offensively. In a crazy way, but I don't.
Well, maybe
defensively, your idea is to slow down the game and lock up the 76ers offense early on, and maybe you try to control the pace that way. I could see that as a strategy option.
When we made the case after Game 3 that Rodney Magruder should play more minutes in Game 4, that we thought Tyler might be, you know, too banged up at this point, but I think he just continues to play through his injuries because that's who Tyler Johnson is, even when he's not really being effective out there. He's not capable of doing much out there. And I think
he was messing with his hand bandage like the entire time he was in the game.
Yeah. So I think
obviously bothering him.
Some people might look at a rotation or starting lineup change as a desperation move. And maybe that's the case. I mean, this is an elimination game facing Miami here. It's game 5. You lose in Philadelphia, your season is done. So why not make something quote unquote radical and just insert Winslow into the lineup? I think it works. I think we saw Dario Saric being guarded by Josh Richardson when they started the game. So if Richardson slides off of him and goes onto Redick, Winslow will pick up the slack there. I think that will disrupt a lot of what they do. And I think both of those guys can play enough minutes where you're not going to lose anything. Look, when Bellinelli comes in off the bench, then you can bring in Magruder or Johnson who can provide some nice defense against them. And I think that'll work.
Yeah, the Winslow and Richardson minutes, they've only played 37 minutes together in this series. Spoelstra typically will have at least one, usually two of either Winslow, Richardson, and James Johnson on the floor at any time for defensive purposes. But playing Winslow and Richardson together hasn't, like, if you look at the advanced metrics, hasn't worked out for them. I mean, they have a minus 9.7 net rating, a defensive rating of 123.3, which is incredibly high when Winslow and Richardson are on the floor. But I think it's too small of a sample size. I think the matchups are really important there. There's a lot of noise in that stat, and I don't trust that advanced stat. This is one of those times where I don't like that advanced metric. Josh Richardson, number one, has been, according to the advanced metrics, one of the worst defensive players on the Heat, according to their on-off numbers, and we know that that's not true, right? We just know that that's probably based on runs and matchups, and again, small sample size can have a big impact on that. So I think Winslow and Richardson does work really well defensively. I just, again, I don't know that if the problem is that Miami is giving up these leads late in the games and getting out-executed and outplayed in the fourth quarter, I don't know that starting Justice Winslow is the solve for that problem. You know, I don't know that that's the correct troubleshoot. I think that Miami is doing a good enough job in quarters 1 through 3. They need to figure out what's going on in quarter 4. And I think that gets us to our next question, which comes from Chris, who asks, where has Kelly gone? Kelly being Kelly Olynyk, who hasn't played a whole lot these last couple of games. I mean, he had a big game one against Philadelphia, 31 minutes, had 26 points, but has basically disappeared after that. 11 points in 33 minutes in game 2, 9 points in 36 minutes in game 3, and only played 9 minutes in game 4. Now, he picked up 3 early fouls, so you understand why he was out early in the game, but you'd think Miami would have gone to him a little bit later, especially they had another one of those 4 or 5 minute scoring droughts between the third and fourth quarter. I really thought Kelly Olynyk could have helped there, and Spo has just not been confident in Olynyk in this series. There's something you're seeing from why can't they play Olynyk?
Huge game 4. I mean, most of his points came at the free throw line. He finished with 14 points, but he was 10 of 13 from the line, 2 of 11 from the field. And I think that's really what the difference was. But Olynyk just isn't capable of matching the level of physicality that Embiid brings. Adebayo does. He's made adjustments which offer some glimpses and some hope for the future of this franchise, because I think Adebayo has been able to understand what to do when it comes to guarding a guy like Embiid. And he's made that progression over the course of the series. And he was able to match the physicality. He drew a foul Embiid, pulled some nice rebounding in there as well. You know, he only had five boards in 16 minutes, which isn't bad at all. And you know, his camaraderie, again, his chemistry with Dwayne Wade, I think is a nice added bonus as well. As far as Olynyk is concerned, I think he just needs to get into a better flow, and he just doesn't match up very well with Embiid out there. He's so worried about that defensive matchup that he fails to initiate things on offense. And I think Embiid can blow up what Kelly does well offensively. Like, if he brings in that dribble handoff game, I think Embiid is quick enough to cover that ground more than a guy like Ersan Ilyasova or Rashawn Holmes or somebody, or Amir Johnson, certainly.
Yeah, Olynyk's kind of in that weird middle ground where he's not quite big enough to guard Embiid, but he's not quite quick enough to
exploit it.
And you can't really move. Like, even if you were to put Bam and Olynyk on the floor together, or you were to play Olynyk when Ilyasova's in there, he's not quite fast enough to. I think he could guard Ilyasova, but it seems like Miami is trying to, instead of matching up with him at that point, like they did, Spo did match up with him, but went with James Johnson instead, right? Because James Johnson is a little bit quicker, and Ilyasova likes to run off of screens just like Marco Bellinelli does, and that matches up a little bit better. But when Spo hasn't matched up by going small with JJ on Ilyasova, he's actually gone big either with Bam or keeping Whiteside on the floor and trying to exploit it a little bit that way, even though he's had a short leash on that strategy. But look, I think in the final game we might see Kelly Olynyk a little bit more, only because he's been one of Miami's most consistent players this season, and I guess what else do they have to lose? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Olynyk played 30 minutes in game 5 the way that, you know, Miami's rotations go. All right, speaking of rotations, we got a big, big question from Australia about Miami's rotations and Justice Winslow being a bright spot in the series. We'll get to that after we come back from this break. Before we move on with the show, we want to take a quick break and tell you about our Patreon page. You can find it by going to patreon.com/lockedonheat. And we are humbly asking for people to commit to a monthly pledge to help us continue to improve the quality of the show. Thanks to you who have already supported the podcast, we have quickly reached our initial funding goal that allowed us to purchase software that improved the quality of the podcast. But we aren't just stopping there. We've added a new tier of supporters. For $5 a month, you'll get access to a bunch of goodies, including salary cap and depth chart projections, free agency player rankings by position, a running list of our favorite trade ideas, and whatever else we can think of. Just go to patreon.com/lockedonheat to get started. Again, that's patreon.com/lockedonheat. That's patreon.com/lockedonheat. All right, this next question comes from Marcus, our Patreon supporter, who writes in, Justice Winslow is such a bright spot. Do you think he can have a good rivalry with Ben Simmons in the future? If he can be a Ron Artest level player, I think that would be enough to compete with Simmons in the playoffs for years to come. Let's start with that Ron Artest comparison. What do you think about that? I don't hate it, especially given that Winslow has shown some fieriness in this round.
I don't like it as much as you do. I was looking at some of the numbers.
All I said was I don't hate it. I just said I don't hate it.
No, I think you were saying between the lines how much you love it, to be honest with you. Artest was a better shooter than Winslow was when he first started. A better all-around player, I think. I think Winslow's better suited for this era of basketball because of his versatility, though. His switchability on being able to guard a number of players. Maybe Artest had that as well, to be honest with you. But I don't know about this rivalry thing. I think we're looking at it too much and hoping that it's going to carry over. I don't know that it really lasts beyond this playoff series. I think it's easy to get caught up in a moment and to dislike Ben Simmons and what he does. But I don't know that next November or next February, when they're matching up in a regular season game, that anybody's going to look at that at Winslow and Simmons and see them going at it, to be honest with you. I just don't see it that way.
No, it's like how the Jets think that they have a rivalry with the Patriots. It would be, you know, it's just, I don't know, given where the Heat are at right now, the 76ers are on pace to basically be one of the top two or three teams in the Eastern Conference for the next several years. Miami is not on that pace. That's not where their track is headed right now. Yeah. So I agree. But Winslow, that said, has been a major bright spot of this series. I mean, I love the intensity and the fire that he's playing with. I mean, we've never seen this kind of aggression. I've been calling him Aggro Winslow on Twitter. I love how aggressive he has been on both sides of the floor. Just the level of energy he's playing, just his rebounding even. I mean, he had that huge offensive rebound against Joel Embiid at one point in game four. The way that he's just putting his butt into guys and boxing out, the way that he's and getting defensive boards and then pushing it down the floor on offense, getting to the rim. He's shown a lot more explosiveness with his leaping ability. I love everything I'm seeing from Winslow. Again, I've pointed this out on another show, but if there's a silver lining to this series, it's that Justice Winslow, I think, is turning a corner because we're really seeing what he can do, especially in a playoff series. What he can do in a playoff series, he can really impact.
If you remember my criticism of Winslow when he first began his career with the Heat was my concerns that he would never really live up to that potential as a lottery pick. Because he never really showed the emotionality, the intensity that I thought was required of somebody or required of him to take over that significant role that we projected him to take over. But we're starting to see that. And I absolutely agree with you that he is a bright spot. Like, you know, we're going to address some questions on a later show probably about potential trades and things like that. And I think this playoff series has done a lot to change my perspective at the very least as to whether or not Winslow can be a foundational player on this roster. I'm not quite sure if that's the case. I'm given the option to trade Winslow for Kawhi Leonard, I'm probably going to go for Kawhi Leonard. But at the same time, I would be much more disappointed to see Winslow traded at this point than I was, say, 2 weeks ago.
So are you officially shedding the Winslow as a bust?
I don't know that I ever really officially held that strong an opinion, but yes, I am officially shutting it down.
Our next question comes from Scott, who writes in, and this question came in after Game 3. Long-time listener, first-time emailing. Love the work you lads do listening all the way in Australia. Oh, did you want to read this question, David? I'm not going to.
No, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do it.
Something I know.
Yes, I'll do it.
You ready?
All right. Long-time listener.
Coming from Australia. This
from Australia. Long-time listener, first-time emailing. Love the work you lads do listening all the way in Australia. Something I noticed after this loss in Game 3, depth is a fantastic thing to have, but you need at least one or two players to play the majority of the game for structure, hierarchy, and guidance. Unfortunately, the Heat's lack of a star and consistent player threatening the game each night really hurts in this regard, as we lose so much momentum when the hot player goes out compared to the Sixers with Simmons 40 minutes, Embiid 30 minutes, and Bellinelli 32 minutes, providing a lot of consistency. Once again, though, a great shooting night by Philly took the game away from the Heat. Fun series to watch, and it just sucks that the talent gap is so large.
What happened to my co-host?
Sorry, Scott. Hope amazing. I didn't offend you and the rest of our fans down under.
You had to try. I loved it. Look, that was better than Alec Baldwin's Boston accent in The Departed, so this is good. All right, where do we even begin with this? I think that the talent gap obviously showed, as we talked about at the top of the show there. And this is an interesting point that Scott has, is the Sixers being able to play Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Well, not really Embiid so much because he's still on a minutes restriction. But guys like Ben Simmons for extended minutes, that's just not something that the Heat really have. And we've complained about them not playing Dragic as much, and I think that was a mistake.
But he corrected in game four.
Not enough to get him fired, but a mistake. But he corrected it, yeah, in the next game. And that's probably the closest thing that they had, but even Dragic doesn't have... Like, I mentioned the impact a guy like Ben Simmons can have on in every facet of the game is so much more than any other guy that the closest player that he'd have to that is Josh Richardson. I think Richardson would have played those extended minutes had he not had to go to the locker room with a shoulder injury in the last game, right? So that's probably the closest thing that the Heat have is in Josh Richardson. But even Richardson can't put his footprint on the offensive side of the ball like Ben Simmons can, right? It's really defensively that he can do that. So I think that's a good point. The Heat just don't have that guy who could do that. And when you have a star, when you have a guy who you can just sort of ride through good times and bad times, it makes things a lot easier. And that's been a really difficult part for Spoelstra's job, is just trying to figure out, like, it's been all season, but in this series as well, who's the hot hand? Who's my guy right now? And that's how you end up with a guy like Kelly Olynyk only playing 9 minutes, because he's going throughout the entire game, not only thinking about coaching adjustments and all these things that he's got to be mindful of, but also, who are my best players? Who are my best five or six guys that I'm going to ride down the stretch? He's got to figure that out on a game-to-game basis in the middle of the game.
And I think you can look at Def being a cross that a lot of teams have borne over the last few years as perfect examples of how far you can go. Like, one of the comparisons that I've always made for this Heat team has been the Boston Celtics of past years, maybe before they acquired the version of Isaiah Thomas that we saw last season, you know, where they had so much depth and they could really make things difficult. Again, defense being the defining characteristic of that team the way it is for Miami this year. You look at that 60-win Atlanta team, and at that point in time, I think you could make a case that that team – was much more talented than this Heat team.
They had several all-stars.
Yeah, Al Horford was playing at a high level. Paul Millsap, a Heat killer in the past, playing at a high level. And even an underrated Kyle Korver, Jeff Teague, is not, you know, at that point in time, is not the version that we've seen handcuffed by Tom Thibodeau in Minnesota. But at the same time, even though they won 60 games, they weren't that good. I mean, they just weren't a team that was built for the playoffs because they lacked the quote-unquote superstar. And I think that's, as much as we've banged this drum over the course of the season, that's just the reality of who this Heat team is. They don't have anybody. And we've had it for stretches where it's Josh Richardson or Dragic or, you know, over two games in the series, Dwayne Wade, but that's not a realistic foundation. I mean, and that's fine. If you want to look at this team as just an okay team that can make some damage here and there, that's what you have. But if you want this team to continue to advance deeper and deeper into the playoffs, you're going to need to make a move to acquire a superstar. At this point in time, we just don't have it.
And look, I'm glad you compared this Heat team to other teams in the past, because it's not a unique situation in Miami. There aren't a whole lot of superstars in this game. The Sixers are fortunate enough that they have two of them, right? And Embiid and Simmons. We just saw on Sunday, as we're recording this, actually, that the Celtics just lost to the Milwaukee Bucks. Now, the Celtics are way better coached than Milwaukee, and they probably have more depth, I would say, than Milwaukee at this point. But Milwaukee's higher end is just higher because they have a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo who is so capable of just taking over a game, and that's what they did, and they beat the Celtics on Sunday because of that. And if Boston, look, obviously if Kyrie's there, it's a different thing, and if Gordon Hayward's healthy, it's different, but they're not, and that and they compare more favor they compare more to Miami than Milwaukee when they don't have their two superstars there. And look, if Terry Rozier, if Three Sticks isn't going off for them, if they're not getting a bunch of points from Jason Tatum, a rookie, or if Jaylen Brown's not making 6 of his 8 3-pointers in a game, then they lose. And that's really similar to how it kind of works for Miami as well. So, look, we got a bunch of mailbag questions. We're going to post that on our Patreon page for our Patreon supporters, but this is all we have for the our regular Mailbag Monday. And that's all we have for today. We'll be back tomorrow with a preview of Game 5. And then, of course, if you're not already a Patreon supporter, you can head to our Patreon page at patreon.com/lockedonheat and join, sign up there, and then you'll have access to our part 2 of the mailbag, our extra mailbag questions. We got questions about Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and maybe some possible moves that Pat Riley can make over the summer. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments to our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.